One, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from John Russell, Jill Robbins, and Dan Friedel. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, officials in Brazil said Wednesday that at least 78 people have died in landslides and floods in a mountainous area of Rio de Janeiro state. The city of Petrópolis was hit by a strong rainstorm on Tuesday. Mayor Rubens Bontempo said the number of dead could rise as rescuers searched carefully through the wreckage. Petrópolis is a German-influenced city named for a former emperor. It is in the mountains above the city of Rio. For almost 200 years, it has been a vacation place for people escaping summer heat. There are large, older homes of the wealthy along its waterways. Its mountainsides are covered with homes placed closely together. Some of them lack good foundations. Governor Cláudio Castro told reporters Wednesday that the situation was almost like war. He said he was deploying all of the state government's heavy machinery to dig out the buried area. The affected mountain region has seen similar disasters in recent years, including one that caused more than 900 deaths. In the years since, Petrópolis presented a plan to reduce risks of landslides, but progress has been slow. The state fire department said late Tuesday the area got 25.8 centimeters of rain within 3 hours Tuesday. That is almost as much as during the previous 30 days combined. Video on social media showed the landslide carrying away cars and houses. They also showed water moving through Petrópolis and neighboring areas. The Globo television network showed houses buried beneath mud in some places. Several streets remained cut off on Wednesday. Cars and household goods washed into lower parts of the city, blocking the way to get to higher places. "The neighbors came down running, and I gave them shelter," bar owner Emerson Torre said. But under rivers of water, his roof collapsed. He managed to get his mother and three other people out of the bar in time, but one neighbor and the person's daughter were unable to escape. "It was like an avalanche. It fell all at once. I've never seen anything like it," Torre told the AP as rescue helicopters flew overhead. "Every neighbor has lost a loved one, has lost 2, 3, 4 members of the same family." Petrópolis's city hall declared 3 days of mourning. Brazil's president, Jair Bolsonaro, who is on a trip to Russia, said on social media that he told his ministers to deliver immediate support to the families of the victims.
Some Latin American scientists had to become creative to do research when the coronavirus pandemic hit. They say that, had it not been for the pandemic, they may have not considered new ways to do important research. Biologist Claudio Montesa had just finished a master's degree in the United States when he stopped in Panama for a few days. He had a planned flight to Germany to begin his doctoral studies. Then the world began shutting down. He started taking doctoral classes online. Because of the pandemic, many scientists have had to innovate and look for alternatives, Montesa said. An alternative is a different way of doing something. After governments ordered quarantine measures, Montesa realized he might get permission for research if he studied highways. He believed they could be studied without large amounts of travel. Montesa believes the highway research could lead governments to create crossings for wild animals such as armadillos, lowland pacas and agoutis, among others. Eric Nunez is head of the Panama Environmental Ministry's Biodiversity Department. He said that during the first half of 2020, when Panama was under quarantine, scientists had almost zero mobility. Nunez added, there was very little research. Later, the health ministry began to loosen restrictions and permit some scientists to work in protected areas alone or in small groups, Nunez said. Mariana Munoz-Romo is a researcher with the Smithsonian Institution. Before the coronavirus arrived, she had planned to capture a large number of bats from different places around the Panamanian town of Gamboa. But pandemic restrictions soon made that impossible. So, she found a new way to study the flying mammals. Instead of looking at them in a lab, Munoz-Romo watched the bats on video. Cameras were set up in the bats' natural homes. The researcher is studying the sex lives of the animals. She is especially interested in learning the purpose of a strong-smelling substance on the forearms of the fringe-lipped bat. Analyzing these recordings is fabulous because you can generate a mountain of information, said Munoz-Romo, a professor at the University of the Andes in Mérida, Venezuela. When the pandemic closed his laboratory in Gamboa, Dumas Galvez moved many ant colonies to his home in Paraíso. He wanted to continue observing them as part of his research into their immune systems. I had to look for alternatives, Galvez said. So, first he remodeled a room in his house so that it could hold up to 100 ant colonies. His largest colonies were around 200 ants, so he had an estimated 13,000 ants in his home. He watched them for months, but the conditions in the room were poor. It was very hot, he said. The ants began to die. The pandemic prevented him from going out to collect more ants, so he began studying the interaction of ants and a small frog that eats them. Panama has since eased its pandemic restrictions, and the Smithsonian is reopening its centers there. Galvez has been able to do fieldwork again and work with students. If not for the pandemic, I wouldn't have invested the energy in considering alternatives, he said. I probably would not have ever done this project. I'm John Russell.
SpaceX recently announced that a solar storm has disabled at least 40 of the 49 communication satellites that it recently launched. The company said the satellites were launched on February 3rd from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Around the same time, there was a geomagnetic storm watch listed by the U.S. Space Weather Prediction Center. The center warned that a large burst of solar plasma gas and electromagnetic radiation from the sun's surface would likely reach Earth's atmosphere. SpaceX said the storm greatly increased atmospheric density around the satellite's low orbit. This created friction that disabled at least 40 of them. Jonathan McDowell is a Harvard Smithsonian astrophysicist. He said that the incident is believed to be the largest collective loss of satellites from a single geomagnetic event.
Scientists are warning that these destructive solar storms could affect life on Earth at any time. These outbursts from the sun, which eject energy in the form of magnetic fields and plasma gas, are unpredictable and difficult to prepare for. Research shows that Earth is hit by a very destructive solar storm every century or two. In the past, these were mainly colorful light shows on the sky with limited effects on humanity. Modern technology, however, can be severely affected by these solar storms. When an intense geomagnetic storm hit the Earth in September 1859, telegraph systems across North America and Europe failed. Some operators reported receiving electrical shocks. A solar storm in March 1989 caused power failures in Quebec, Canada. The Halloween storms of 2003 affected more than half of the orbiting satellites and disrupted aviation. Electrical service was also knocked out in parts of Europe for several hours, and transformers in South Africa were destroyed. Raimund Muscheler is a geology professor at Lund University in Sweden. In a new study of ice samples, he concluded that a previously unknown huge solar storm about 9,200 years ago would have destroyed communication systems if it had hit Earth in modern times. Daniel Baker is an expert in planetary and space physics from the University of Colorado. When talking about solar storms, he said, "It's something that really needs to be dealt with by policymakers." He added that in the longer term, it's not a question of if, but when.
The sun outbursts could first disrupt the ionosphere, where the Earth's atmosphere meets space, and radio communications. They also create additional friction on some satellites, which is what happened to SpaceX satellites. The storm with its highly charged particles could also be radioactive and present a danger to astronauts in orbit. The gas and magnetic field explosions on the surface of the sun, known as coronal mass ejection, could overload Earth's electrical power systems and speed corrosion of pipelines. The geomagnetic storm can actually cause transformers to burn through if they are not adequately protected, said Muscheler of Lund University. Sangeeta Abdujyoti is an assistant professor in the computer sciences at University of California, Irvine. She warned that solar storms could also damage long-distance communication lines between North America and Europe. Any major solar storm could threaten global positioning system, or GPS, satellites, which are critical to modern life, from driving cars to flying planes. and a big storm can cause a reduction in the ozone to affect the climate on Earth.
McDowell of Harvard Smithsonian expects geomagnetic storm activity to increase as the sun nears its 11-year cycle of magnetic field activity known as sunspots. The cycle is predicted to be at its worst in July 2025. Solar scientists say the good news is that it will be less intense than the most active cycles of past centuries. However, some governments seem unprepared for possible damage likely to be caused by future major storms. Baker, the University of Colorado expert, said a concerned woman in France contacted officials there for advice on how to prepare for a major geomagnetic storm. They told her, "We suggest you buy a chocolate cake, eat it, and wait for the end of the world."
I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Dan Friedel.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The election of Herbert Hoover in 1928 made Americans more hopeful than ever about their future. Hoover seemed to have just the right experience to lead the nation to more economic progress. He was an engineer and businessman who had served in the government as Commerce Secretary. He understood economics and had faith in the future of private business. On a rainy day in March of 1929, Hoover rode down Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington to become the new president. "I have no fears for the future of our country," he told the cheering crowd. "It is bright with hope." Faith Lapidus and Bob Doty tell more about the Republican administration of Herbert Hoover.
The clearest evidence of the public's faith in the economy is the stock market. And the New York Stock Exchange reacted to the new president with a wild increase in prices. During the months after Hoover's election, prices generally rose like a rocket. Stocks valued at $100 climbed to $200, then $300, $400. Men and women made huge amounts of money overnight. Publications and economic experts advised Americans to buy stocks before prices went even higher. Time and again, people heard how rich they could become if they found and bought stocks for companies growing into industrial giants. "Never sell the United States short," said one publication. Another just said, "Everybody ought to be rich."
A number of economic experts worried about the sharp increase in stock prices that followed Hoover's election. The president himself urged stock market officials to make trading more honest and safe. And he approved a move by the Federal Reserve Board to increase the interest charged to banks. However, both efforts failed to stop the growing number of Americans who were spending their money wildly on stocks. Some experts pointed to danger signs in the economy during the summer of 1929. The number of houses being built was dropping. Industries were reducing the amount of products that they held in their factories. The rate of growth in spending by average Americans was falling sharply. And industrial production, employment, and prices were down. These experts warned that the American economy was just not strong enough to support such rapid growth in stock prices. They said there was no real value behind many of the high prices. They said a stock price could not increase four times while a company's sales stayed the same. They said the high prices were built on foolish dreams of wealth, not real value.
But the prices went still higher. Buyers fought with each other to pay more and more for company stocks. The average price of all stocks almost doubled in just 1 year. It seemed everybody was buying stocks, even people with little money or economic training. A clothing salesman got advice from a stock trader visiting his store and made $200,000. A nurse learned of a good company from someone in the hospital. She made $30,000. There were thousands of such stories. By early September, the stock market reached its high point of the past 18 months. Shares of the Westinghouse Company had climbed from $91 to $313. The Anaconda Copper Company had risen from $54 to $162. Union Carbide jumped from $145 to $413. Life was like a dream, but like any dream, it could not last forever.
In September 1929, stock prices stopped rising. During the next month and a half, stock prices fell, but only slowly. Then, suddenly, at the end of October, the market crashed. Prices dropped wildly. Leading stocks fell $5, $10, $20 in a single day. Everyone tried to sell their stocks, but no one was buying. Fear washed across the stock market. People were losing money even faster than they had made it.
The stock market collapsed on Thursday, October 24th, 1929. People remember the day as Black Thursday, the day the dreams ended. The day began with a wave of selling. People from across the country sent messages to their stock traders in New York. All the messages said the same thing. Sell! Sell the stocks at any price possible! But no one was buying, and so down the prices came. The value of stock for the Montgomery Ward store dropped from $83 to $50 in a single day. The RCA Radio Corporation fell from $68 to $44, down $24 in just a few hours. Down the stocks fell, lower and lower. Several of the country's leading bankers met to discuss ways to stop the disaster. They agreed to buy stocks in large amounts to stop the wave of selling. The bankers moved quickly, and for 2 days, prices held steady. But then, like snow falling down the side of a mountain, the stocks dropped again. Prices went to amazingly low levels. One business newspaper said simply, "The present week has witnessed the greatest stock market disaster of all time."
The stock market crash ruined thousands of Americans. In a few short weeks, traders lost $30 billion, an amount almost as great as all the money the United States had spent in World War I. Some businessmen could not accept what had happened. They jumped from the tops of buildings and killed themselves. In fact, one popular joke of the time said that hotel owners had to ask people if they wanted rooms for sleeping or jumping. But the stock market crash was nothing to laugh about. It destroyed much of the money that Americans had saved. Even worse, it caused millions of people to worry and lose faith in the economy. They were not sure what to expect tomorrow. Business owners would not spend money for new factories or business operations. Instead, they decided to wait and see what would happen. This reduced production and caused more workers to lose their jobs. Fewer workers meant fewer people with money to buy goods. And fewer people buying goods meant less need for factories to produce. So it went. In short, economic disaster.
Why did the stock market crash? One reason, people had been paying too much for stocks. Everyone believed that prices would go higher and higher forever. People paid more for stocks than the stocks were worth. They hoped to sell the stocks at even higher prices. It was like a children's balloon that expands with air, blowing bigger and bigger until it bursts. But there were other important reasons. Industrial profits were too high and wages too low. 5% of the population owned one-third of all personal income. The average worker simply did not have enough money to buy enough of all the new goods that factories were producing. Another problem was that companies were not investing enough money in new factories and supplies. There were also problems with the rules of the stock market itself. People were allowed to buy stocks when they did not have the money to do so.
Several government economic policies also helped cause the stock market crash of 1929. Government tax policies made the rich richer and the poor poorer. And the government did little to control the national money supply, even when the economy faced disaster. The stock market crash marked the beginning of the Great Depression, a long, slow, painful fall to the worst economic crisis in American history. The Depression would bring suffering to millions of people. It would cause major political changes, and it would be a major force in creating the conditions that led to World War II.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.